This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
7 minutes after 10 o'clock, you're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin Simpier. So it is time for Thought Council, as we do every Friday. And as you would know, that number on speed dial 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. So three conversations that we'll have. Basic Education's plan to restart the academic year. Khotso Mokgweseng, who's a school teacher, argues that school facilities are not up to par in terms of hygienic standards. And Abongile Zizi wants to speak about Bianca Skumbi. You remember Bianca Skumbi, yes, the Miss SA hopeful. Not Miss SA hopeful anymore. And the conversation Abongile wants to bring to the fore is being racist, homophobic and sexist is not a rite of passage. And then COVID-19 in SA, how the coronavirus has exposed the ANC-led government's failures in addressing poverty and inequality. And that's a conversation that Lungani Mthethwa, a journalism lecturer, wants to bring to the fore. So remember your calls on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. Abongile, Khotso, and Lungani, good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
So, Abongile, let's start off with you.
Okay, so I'm going to preface my conversation with this, right? People can learn, people can grow, and we hold space for them. We forgive them, and they are allowed to change their views. But being racist, xenophobic, homophobic, fatphobic, it's not a rite of passage. So when you preface your apology with, I was 15, in a society that does not hold space for black children, for example, to be able to be carefree at 15, it's not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. It's not good enough to say that I was 15 in a society where 13-year-olds have to deal with racial microaggressions and protest school hair rules. So I don't think that that apology suffices. And I'm sorry, but you don't get to speak for women of South Africa when you have shown such disdain for the majority of them. And in the case of Bianca, right, specifically, compare that to Zuleika Patel. Zuleika Patel probably went to school with girls like Bianca. So I can imagine the microaggressions at school, right? You're dealing with someone who makes racist jokes because of several layers of privilege that protect them from some of... So some of her tweets, for example, about fat people, right? You can make fat jokes because maybe you're not fat. So this happening to her and the other contestants, that's called consequences, right? So racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia are never victimless crimes. You don't get to be racist at 15, and when the consequences come home to you at 27 or however old you are, trying to be Miss South Africa, you hide behind being 15. It doesn't work like that. I don't think that that's fair, especially in a society that does not hold the same space for black teenagers.
Lungani,
and I think that's my major point.
Yeah. Lungani, what's your take on this?
Thank you, Audrey. I wouldn't have agreed with you more, Zizi, because what you're saying is exactly true. From what I've learned growing up is that a child gets to understand life and all the fundamentals of life at the age of six. At that year, at that time, which means whatever you acquire as a child is going to stay in your mind. When you grow up, you grow up with it. Whatever you say when you're 20, you're 18, it's something that was brought to you or was taught to you when you were still young. So Bianca coming up and saying, no, I was young at that time. Yes, of course you were young, but it's a schooling that you received from your household. Because remember, we are who we are because of what we got from our parents, from our household. And then we become those, we embrace those qualities when we are up. And then if you get a platform to show them out, that's when then Bianca could be able to do that, to showcase those qualities that she attained as she was growing up. So it's not really, really an apology that she came up with that okay. I was young. It's not acceptable in my take.
Okay, let me hear from Khoto. I'm going to give you guys what my take is on it just in the next while. Khoto?
All right. I also agree with my panelist here because the way I saw it or the way I actually found the apology, it was not that sincere, to be honest. Mm. And I think it is actually, we are actually fortunate as young parents now, or our children are going to be fortunate because we are actually going to put them in the right direction. Meaning, growing up, going to school, they must know how to behave and how to treat other people as they grow up, because everything that you do when you grow up, as you grow up, always have a certain impact in the future or in your adult stage, and it will always come if, as long as you are not, how can I put it, it will always haunt you as long as you are not careful. So I think I'm of the same view with my panelists here.
Okay. So, Abongile, listening to what Lungani has to say, just quickly try and switch off the Zoom in for me there, Abongile. Apologies. There's a terrible echo coming out in the background. So, in terms of this 15-year-old, 14-year-old, does the parents or do the parents at all bear any responsibility and accountability for the actions of their child, especially at that age?
I think so.
Mm.
I definitely think your background has a lot to do with that, because like I said before, it is layers, it's several layers of privilege that allowed Bianca as a 15-year-old to be able to make certain jokes.
Mm.
I mean, you can joke about ugly people when you feel like you're not one of them.
Yeah.
You can make jokes about black people if you feel superior to them.
Mm.
You can make jokes about poor people when you feel like you're not one of them. So the layers of privilege and her upbringing made it okay. It was okay to, and I don't believe that she just said it on Twitter if she can't say it in real life and doesn't say it in her everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Tell you why I asked this question, and I'll get Lungani and Khoto to comment on this as well, is that when a child does well in school, when a child achieve all, like just an A student, and they're just acing it everywhere, they're great in sports, great in academia, like they're just doing great, the parents take the credit as well, that the parents have done really well with their child, and that's the reason that the child can achieve all of these goals. But once the child does something wrong, then all of a sudden we hear about society and the role that society has played in influencing the child. And almost the parents then are exempted from any responsibility and accountability that has led the child to what the child later would become. Lungani? Hi, Lungani.
Thank you. Yes, I'm here.
Sure.
Here. Now we're talking about two different levels of socialization.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the parent space, which is the home space, basically, and then the society space. Because if we're talking about society, we're talking about the space that involves parents, but now it can be outside the household.
Mm.
The foundation of socialization happens in the household space. I think it's wrong to blame the society at large about the behavior of the child. We first need to look at how the parents have raised that child. Because whatever the child is doing outside the household space, it's something that has been taught in the household space. The foundation of socialization starts at home. Because you can't expect the child, when the child joins the major society, probably it could be school, university, and so forth, to behave differently from how he or she was raised by the parents. So it starts with the parents.
Okay, and then Khoto, does it happen at all where you have these two, the socialization that happens from home and the socialization that happens in society, where these two then clash, and it's almost a battle of who would influence the child more?
I definitely think they are correlating.
Yeah.
Yes, because
if you can check, I'm a teacher, and normally some of the cases that we have at school regarding things like, sorry about that, regarding things like children fighting with other children, abuse, some sort of, what is bullying?
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever you ask the learners or the children what is going on, you can actually see that everything goes back home. The end result is that this child was not well brought up from their home. So as a result, everything that they do is actually manifested in what in the type of socialism or the type of social behavior that they have with other kids at school. So definitely parents can also be blamed for some of this.
Okay, so 061-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM 987. And with that said, if, for instance, a child goes out and becomes a murderer, do we then also say that this child became a murderer because of the foundation phase and what was wrong at the foundation phase at this child's house? Bandile, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. Me, I've got a question, you know, Aldrin. All right, I'm aware that we black people, we don't love one another. We are hated by other blacks. But now, my question is, will it be a wrong
Bandile, please don't make such remarks on the show again. Please don't do that. No, it's not
Aldrin,
Bandile, I'm going to stop. No, guys, please. Okay. So yesterday we also got a call around the black people and what. Guys, please, this issue around black people hating other black people, that's not true, Bandile. You're calling in to a radio station, a black-owned radio station, where black people are calling in. Has anyone hated you, Bandile?
Yes.
Okay, bye-bye. Tabo?
Hey, Eldrin.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bianca at the minor, when she tweeted those tweets, she would not be held responsible because of she's a minor. Only parents must take their responsibility because of children mimic what adults do. So in this case, she cannot be held responsible. The parent, it's like they endorsed what she was doing. But as an adult, brain, you can be taught to be a racist. But as you grow older, you can differentiate between wrong and right. But that, at that point, you make a choice because of you clearly know that this thing is wrong and this is right. So I don't think when people continue to be racist, it comes from they must blame their upbringing because of they are adults now. They have their own thinking, so it's up to them so that they can choose to continue with those reservation remarks. But the problem that I have is this. As long as we put a price on racism, there's no way we're going to get this thing in order. People are paying fines. It should not be allowed because of white people have money to pay. Unlike you and I who don't have money, if I come with racial remarks to any race, I won't be able to pay. So that means I'm going to jail. So there's no balance in there.
Okay, then. Thank you for that. On Twitter, Mlungisi says that so that we are not seen as hypocrites, can we call Kevin Hart and Lewis Hamilton homophobes? Nzeki says, which apology is being referred to here since there have been several different apologies, the ones in the morning and the ones during the day. Apologies, my left foot. Racism is taught and your guests are right. There was another tweet here. Okay, here Spencer says, the problem with racism is based on the background of race brought by apartheid, which therefore means only Africans are not racist and therefore all non-Africans are racist. It's unfortunate that punishment is muted to those who pronounce it. What's your take on that, Abongi?
So what I think is that generally you can't, I don't think that black people can't be racist. I think they can be prejudiced.
And that, I think, is a whole other conversation on its own. What I want to comment on is that comment that said, do we then call Kevin Hart and Anthony Hamilton homophobes?
Mm.
I preface my conversation with saying people are allowed to grow and we are allowed to forgive, but we hold them accountable. So, yes.
Mm. Okay.
The same way we are holding Bianca accountable.
Yes.
I think everyone should be held accountable, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because you were that person and you caused
harm. Yeah.
That just because
irrespective of what influenced it, it's you who carried out the action.
Exactly. And that's where you need to take responsibility. Yeah. Because while you have grown and forgiven yourself and evolved and learned,
mm-hmm.
you still caused the harm. And you can't put the burden of that healing on the people you've hurt. It's unfair to say, I've forgiven myself, therefore you should too, and we must move on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me just quickly take this call from 4D before we move on. Good morning.
Hey, morning, Andre. How?
Good, good, man. How's it?
So, man, a quick one, man. I just want to say this, man. Look, it's not fair. The lady said that the parents of Bianca should be held accountable. Look, I was homophobic 6 years ago. It won't be fair if you were to go to my mom and say, yeah, I'm done, I could set this on Twitter. My mom doesn't even know what I tweet. Mm. But I've changed and I've grown. So it's not fair to go and say, no, their parents should be held accountable.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the parents are monitoring all our social networks.
Okay.
Second point is, Tina, black people, let's say I'm a kula. Our parents didn't teach us that. So it's not fair to say white people are teaching their kids to be racist. That's a point I wanted to make. Thank you.
Yeah, but 4D, before you go, so your parents don't know what your conduct is like on social media and probably aren't privy to some of your prejudice. But for instance, if you succeed, if you get a promotion and so forth, are they allowed to celebrate with you?
Are they allowed to
take credit for it as well?
True.
So why shouldn't they be held?
But credit in the sense that it took me to school. I'm not credit to, like, no, they taught me how to pass at school or how to do it at school. They can't take credit for that. They can take credit, like, no, we took them to school. Leave it at that.
Yeah.
But as to how I passed school, no, they can't take credit for that. Same way I was homophobic 6 years ago. Mm. I've unlearned a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, we unlearn things. Like, I was young 6 years ago. And I still say this on Twitter. Like, listen, I was homophobic. I'm not proud of it, but this is who I was.
Yeah.
But you can't come and say today, yeah, you're still homophobic and you can't change. So I think we should use the same energy when it comes to racism. If someone says, okay, I used to be racist,
let's give them
benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I personally, I don't agree. If a child is homophobic, if a child is racist, we need to also ask about what happens in the social setting in terms of what happens in the house and what are some of the conversations that happen in the house as well. When, for instance, you guys watch TV and you watch Generations and you see, who was that guy against Senzo and Senzo Noban? Senzo and Jason kissing. What are the conversations that continue then in the household once you guys have watched that? For me, those are some of the teachable moments, you know? And unfortunately, I personally feel that parents can't be exempted from the behavior of their children, good or bad. Let's move over to the second conversation. And this is the one on basic education's plans to restart the academic year. Khotso?
All right. Here's my story.
Mm.
At first, I wanted to focus strictly on hygiene and school facilities. But then I realized that by doing that, I will not be able to paint a clear image of a safe and a healthy school environment.
Mm.
So the way I define my healthy and safe school environment, I would say it's an environment whereby I will promote learning by ensuring a health and safety of learners and educators. As well as other educators in the school. But now, let's look at our situation now. If someone was to ask me in February and say, do you think there's actually a possibility of a healthy and safe school environment? I would definitely agree. I would definitely say yes. But then if someone asked me in March, let's say early March, I would also agree. But late March, I would never agree. And this is, I think, the same answer that our department would actually come up with, that no, we cannot have a safe and secure health school for our learners. Why are we saying that? It's because early this year we figured, or we were told, that there's this COVID-19 that is actually a new disease that is affecting the respiratory of our the respiratory systems of our bodies and so on. But now remember, in March, the Department of Education, just with a few cases, they decided to say, you know what, let's put an abrupt stop to the schooling days.
Mm.
But now, with all these new cases coming up, the Department of Education is now sort of going against what they believed in earlier in March.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I do understand that the plan is to save the 2020 academic year. And we really have to do it, and we also want to do it.
Mm.
But my question is, are we ready as teachers and learners? Is the department ready? Are the facilities ready or not? Well, it's just unfortunate that we heard that during this lockdown, there were actually a large number of facilities that were vandalized.
And we
do know that since they are vandalized, even before the vandalism, we knew that we had problem of overcrowding.
Mm.
And let's think about COVID. They are obviously preaching social distance and stuff. Now with vandalized facilities, we are definitely going to struggle to actually do what? To keep up with that social distancing standard.
Yeah.
So, and you remember, the minister also indicated that the focus or the budget will actually be on maintenance, but it will not be on maintenance, but it will be on provision of what?
Of the infrastructure that's needed, yeah.
Exactly. But my experience has actually taught me that the Department of Education is not that consistent, mm-hmm. and they are hardly punctual, to be honest. They do things late and at times that create a havoc in schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Rukhoto?
Yes?
Just quickly conclude that point.
Yes. I was saying they are inconsistent and they are hardly punctual. So it will be very difficult to believe that they are going to provide all those that they promised to provide at the time they actually promised to do what.
Okay. So history also shows us that that is what the department does. You'd find schools in certain areas, a great infrastructure and so forth, and you find schools in the Eastern Cape and Ezlalini, for instance, mud structures and so forth. And the department then says, we will deal with this. The sanitation problem as well, that we will deal with this, and they never deal with it. And then you'll hear about 2-3 schools that have been fixed. So now we know that that is what the department normally does and where the blind spots of the department are and some of the weaknesses of the Department of Basic Education. So based on that information and the history of the department, what are we saying about going back to school? Because the department says and the minister says, no child should be left behind. 061-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM 987.
Tweet Aldrin at Aldrin St. Pierre.
And you can also call us on 061-987-000. Your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM 987. So, Abongile, your take on that conversation, or the topic rather, that has been presented by Ukhoto.
So, my one big thing about schools reopening, Aldrin, is the vast inequality in our schools. And yes, the minister has spoken at length at how they'll try to address that. But this is just the first wave. In countries across the world that have relaxed their lockdowns and allowed children to go back to school, okay, the children have cross-infected each other. Like in Paris, for example, schools were open for a week. There were 17 new cases. Are we going to be able to cope with that? Is our health system going to be able to cope with a fallout from infections at school? Leave the fact that in Mamakwe, apokungekho namanzi khona. You are expecting not only social distancing under a tree, you are expecting sanitization. I don't know, but we need to look clearly at the predicament we are in. Yes, it's not like countries go through a pandemic every second year, so we have experience. We will make errors as a country in dealing with it. It will be hit or miss. But I think the teachers expressing concern
about safety at school. Mm-hmm. And the disparities in access to that safety, because the level of safety that will be at a public school and a private school will be different. This is South Africa. Our marked inequalities are being laid bare by COVID-19 at every turn. So I understand Hotel's concerns, and I agree with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Lungani, your take on it?
There's a statement they usually quote or use when they're speaking to the media, that they want to make sure that no one is left behind.
Mm.
That's also a problem on its own, looking at the level of inequalities in the country, but that's a topic for another time still yet to come. But also, if you hear that these people are busy saying there's about 3,000 schools that is without water, to me, that tells that they're actually not ready to reopen school at this point in time, because we are approaching the peak time. So the question is, as they are reopening school, are they trying to fast-track the rate as to when do we get to that peak time, or they are trying to make sure that they are saving the academic calendar? If you save the academic calendar, what does it mean by the lives of these people, by the lives of these kids? Which one do you choose between the two? Because honestly speaking, if you look at the situation, the way the government has been doing things and the way people have been commenting, it's clear that the government is not yet ready to reopen school on many things, because I don't think they are ready. They will have the sanitizers in place. They would have maintained the building in a state that would be able to accommodate these kids when they go back to school. So I don't really think the government is now ready, because remember, this COVID thing, It has to do with the psyche of the person as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's about how you think about it. You can't be in school and thinking about, what if I die? How can I be productive in that space?
Yeah. Yeah. Sarah, good morning.
Hello.
Hi. Good morning. Sure, you can go ahead.
Yeah, you're speaking to Sarah from HQDS.
Mm.
Aldrin, I'm a concerned parent about our children being sent back to school.
Mm-hmm.
The manner in which the minister, Ma Enji, put it last time she addressed the nation, if you remember quite well, she indicated in capital letters to say that if as a parent you feel that you've got anxiety, you are fearful to send your child back to school, don't send him or her, because you are not forced to.
Yeah.
And then at the back of my mind, I think, did that mean? It means that already the minister has spoken like a lawyer here. She is out of danger. Should your child be sent to school, it means you will be doing that at your own risk. Yeah, she won't be held liable.
Mm.
Because, I mean, she will indicate that to say, I said, those who have got anxiety and who are fearful, don't send your child. So should something happen, she won't be held liable. And then she is promoting homeschooling. Homeschooling, not everybody will be able to do that, to understand. If you can check, yes, at the UK, they are saying that they are reopening schools. But is the minister aware that in the UK, the UK is in Europe, and Europe is in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, their season are in somewhere spring, summer.
Mm-hmm.
Rina, we are getting into
winter.
Mm-hmm. She cannot compare us with the countries which are in the Northern Hemisphere, not unless she doesn't know her facts well.
Yeah, no, point taken. Thomas, good morning.
Hi, Aldrin. Yes. Okay, let me just put it this way. When I was in a matric class, we were 68 in a class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we were inside one class. That is only a class of, we were attending English, though we were going to be separated to our difference in our streams. Now, the minister mentioned that only grade 12s are the ones who are starting to go back to school at high school. Then at primary, it's grade 7s. Remember, this class is going to have the whole school to themselves. That means they're going to share them into the classes that are not occupied at that time. Then they're going to see from there what's going to happen. Remember, we must be worried about the kids that are not going to attend, especially if this is your matric year or your final year at this certain school, you are moving to another school. Mm. Now, we are all saying, hey, she spoke like a lawyer and what. Come on, guys, let's use the common sense here. Remember, at school first, they taught us how to write. What do you think they will be unable to teach us how, or to teach our kids how to practice perfect social distance? That will be a simple thing to be done at school, unless if you only want something to shield from just to stay home.
Yeah.
Because remember, we must be worried about this kid's future.
But and also, though, we must be worried about the teachers and what we're currently seeing with even medical staff falling ill to COVID-19. And I think there are four in the Western Cape who have died. Khoto, is this for you as a teacher? Is this one of your concerns?
It's definitely one of my concerns, to be honest.
Mm.
I'm like, these people are actually trained people who are supposed to know exactly the in and out of the virus. And then you take this now responsibility to teachers who actually went to school to learn about teaching the learners, teaching children. So to be honest with you, it's not only the learners you are concerned about. We include teachers there. We have other people there in schools who are working as part of the non-teaching staff. And we know, or we've heard over the news, that people who are older are actually more susceptible to the disease compared to the young learners.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to say, most of the learners who are in grade 12 nowadays, when you look at their age, they are actually not young kids.
Yeah.
They are above 18, they are probably 20, 25, 26. They are young adults, most of them. So for us to actually consider the fact that kids or children are susceptible to are less susceptible to the disease, we are actually excluding them. And we are also placing them in greater danger as well.
Okay. Okay, so let's move over. Let's move over to the next conversation, also in relation to COVID-19. And Lungani, just listening into what Khoto was speaking about earlier on in terms of infrastructure, and your conversation is about how the ANC-led government's failure in addressing poverty and inequality has again been exposed by COVID-19.
Yes, Audrey, thank you for an opportunity. Yes, without looking on the infrastructure on its own, because remember that if we're talking here, the moment we touch the infrastructure, it's more like we shied away from the social development. Because what we're seeing happening at this time is that people are actually frustrated on a social space, whether it's on an infrastructure level, but on a social space, they are very much frustrated. And why they are frustrated, it's because the ANC, or let me just say the government, we all know who's been in power, so we know it's the ANC, but I'll just use the government term. The government, after 25 years, they haven't been doing justice to the people of South Africa. They haven't been providing them what they actually need. Of course, they have, but not to an extent that people can say, oh, wow, now we can see a huge difference. It's a very minimal difference that we have seen thus far. The inequality is more like it's increasing than being able to close that gap. The government is failing to close that gap. So now the reason why I'm saying the COVID-19 has exposed the ANC government is because now we can actually see that there are people who depend on a daily basis survival to what they're going to eat on that day. If now we're saying these people should be staying at home without going to work or without going on the street to sell potatoes and tomatoes, how are they going to survive? Then the government comes in a very short space of time. They say, no, don't worry, we'll give you 350 rand. We'll increase child support. And also, that shows that the government has been able to do all these things all the past 25 years, but they never wanted to do it. That's my take. Two, people are saying we don't have water. We are frustrated. How can we be able to treat or to handle the COVID situation? Then the government says, don't worry, we'll buy all the tanks around the country. Then we'll load those tanks with water. If it's happening, I'm not sure. But them having said and doing that, it shows that they are actually capable of doing it. But it's a matter of being, of taking a choice that we are not going to do it for the past 25 years.
Yeah.
They've never been able to, or they never wanted to do it. That's why I'm saying it's a deliberate choice or deliberate failure by the government of the ANC. Now they're giving food parcels and all these things, the government grant increase. All that has been avoided. If the government managed to produce or to create more job opportunities so that more people would be able to contribute in a tax revenue and also people would be able to sustain themselves, not the government sustaining them. Because if the government is sustaining people in a country of 60 million, very few people are working to sustain those who are unemployed. The level of inequality is further expanding for that purpose, that the government is not doing enough to create job opportunities so that these people will be able to take care of themselves. But what the ANC has been focusing on is what we could probably call the patronage system. We only need people to survive because of us. We only need people to depend on us for our own survival, because if people are able to take care of themselves, very few people will be voting for the government.
Okay.
Which means that patronage system is there to ensure that people keep depending on the government. But now that shows that that patronage system is a problem in times like this. Because people now, they rely on the government. The government cannot provide all these people at this short space of time.
Okay.
This should have been avoided a long time ago.
Okay, Khotso, what's your take on this?
Well, for me, obviously, I would have to take it to education, but I definitely agree with him. Let's look at textbooks, for example, at schools or in schools. A lot of schools don't have textbooks. You find that about 5 or 6 learners are actually showing a textbook. And all along, the department couldn't actually buy the textbook, or they will tell you that they don't have enough money and so on. But all of a sudden, they have all this money now to buy sanitizers and all the essentials that they are talking about. In addition to that, let's look at...
But Khotso, wait, is it really true that we can say all of a sudden, when we hear the Minister of Finance saying that we need to reprioritize our budget and readjust some of our budgets so that we can allocate some of the money that was allocated to different departments to other departments? Can we really say it's an all of a sudden?
Yes, I can actually say it's all of a sudden, because let's look at it. All these years, they are supposed to do this thing, but they don't do them. But suddenly, because let's say now we are talking about going back to school. If the COVID didn't arise, the COVID idea didn't arise, where would we be now? I'm like, do you think all this money that they are actually saying is here for all those things? I was going to buy those things that the learners need, or what? I mean, let's look at maybe the allocations that are done in schools, different allocations. You will know that you get the allocation for things like maintenance, which has actually the lowest percentage. Then you get allocation for other things like the food for learners. You get other things like... food for stationery, or LTSM as they call it.
Yeah.
But then we always know that the money is not enough. And whenever the schools request the money, the department will say the money is not enough. They will always say the money is not enough.
Yeah.
But as we speak now, the allocations were made for all those things that I mentioned.
Yeah.
But on top of that, now they have extra allocation for the COVID crisis. So that means the very same money that they were supposed to actually top up the schools with was there all along. But they actually waited for the crisis to be here for them to actually release those funds and say, okay, we can avail this funds for this particular crisis that we have.
Okay. Obongile, your take on it?
So we can say that it had to reprioritize its budget, and it had to...
Okay, Abongile, I'm going to ask you to, is it the Zoom, I think, that you need to switch off again, the audio there, please, because it's giving us some bad feedback. On Twitter, Entler says that I've been saying this, my ANC is failing people, as difficult as it is, but one day we will be grateful for this pandemic. It is slowly exposing the ANC's failures to balance society. Where is the money coming from all of a sudden? I don't know about all of a sudden, guys. Abongile? I think all of a sudden a new prioritization, probably, but not all of a sudden there's new money. Abongile, sure, we can hear you now. It's fine. Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that while it's not an all of a sudden, Elgin, you know what has been most heartbreaking to see is the rate of service delivery and the corruption within the service delivery. Yeah. In a pandemic, people are stealing.
Yeah.
There are councillors stealing food in a pandemic. Literally, the world is dying, and you are stealing food parcels. And then this says a lot about public servants who have been entrusted with the people, right? And I think the reason why everyone says all of a sudden is because things that have long been lingering are suddenly being addressed.
Yeah.
Right? So now you can build temporary shelters.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can provide aid. Now you can provide, you see, so that is why it would look all of a sudden. But I think I agree fully that it is a huge failure on the government's part to only during a pandemic provide things that they have been promising for 25 years and at such expeditious speed. You want to commend them for doing it, and then you're like, but for 25 years and then when, huh? You know, and I think that's the problem. You want to say their reaction has been quick, they've been on the pulse, and they've gotten it right mostly.
Yeah.
Why did it have to take a global pandemic?
Okay. Joel, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing, Joel?
Good, man. I fully agree with the last speaker. It's not all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
You will understand that most of humanity are afraid of snakes. If a snake come to your house, you will do something you have never planned to do. You will even innovate during that short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should condemn without reservation councillors and anybody, any public servant who is involved in corruption activity. But also we must commend government's response to this disaster that we face. And it only takes courage for us as citizens to say, here, government, you have done well. Here, we don't agree with you because you have failed us.
Yeah.
And I think we should balance. But I also wanted, if you can allow me a second, government said to us we should go and stay at home. I know it was the previous topic, but so that they can be able to put the systems to deal with this novel virus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, it is the same government that is saying, now go back to your work according to the phases. And they are doing that because they have already seen the trend and the analysis. So I don't understand when I'm a parent as well. I don't understand when we as parents, all of a sudden, we want to hoard and protect ourselves and our kids to the level at which we don't want them to go back to school. It can't be, Adrian, because it is our duty, yes, to take responsibility, but also it is our duty to allow the education of our kids. We are the same parents who are taking taxis, buses to work. We come back, we go to shopping malls, we go back to touch our kids, to wash our kids, to feed our kids. When government say go and stay at home, they didn't guarantee that you're not going to have COVID when you're at home. They found it that it will be necessary to isolate.
Okay, no, Joel, your point is taken. Lungani, the question around, for instance, when we speak about inequality and how government is responding now to COVID-19 and some of its policies now in relation to COVID-19, have you picked up from your end anything that you can say that these are some of the issues that exacerbate inequality or create a fertile ground for inequality?
Oh, can you repeat your question, Chris?
Sure. Okay. I was asking that if you look at government's response to COVID-19 and some of the resolutions that have been put there or the measures that have been put there, is there anything that you can look at and say that based on this, we can see how fertile ground is created for inequality?
Oh, yes, definitely. Mm. Definitely. Because their response, it's something that we never expected from our government. But honestly speaking, I can never shy away from pointing it out that they've done great at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
They've really, really done great. As someone says, we should be grateful for what the COVID has brought us in terms of the development and stuff. So basically, this COVID has created a space of saying, listen, South African government, this is how you should approach the lives of the people. This is how you should approach making the lives of people much better than they are. Because the prioritization thing, I do understand that we can't really say it's an all of a sudden thing.
Yeah.
But here we're looking at 25 versus 3 months.
Yes.
That's a very important thing to also consider, because the moment you prioritize your budget, it means you're taking that money somewhere else where it's supposed to be used. So now, which means you're opening a gap on that space. The gap that will have to be reclosed after this COVID. You're creating another, we're solving a problem by creating another problem.
Okay. No, Abongile, your take on that?
So I fully agree. You're creating a problem somewhere else. And that is why I was saying that you want to commend them for the work that they've done so far. But then you ask, why did it have to take a global pandemic? And yes, their response has been swift. But COVID-19 has done one thing consistently. And that has been highlight all the potholes caused by inequality that we overlook, little things that we overlook, actually.
Yeah.
Because when you look at things like the grant system and how, for once, it bothered everyone that people stand in the sun for 4 to 5 hours for their grant payments. And they stand and they stand, and sometimes the machine is off. They have to come back tomorrow or the day after. And we are finally asking questions like, why is that system not getting looked at? We are saying, why are the schools without water, without water? They didn't start not having water when there was an outbreak in Wuhan. They've always not had water. So it's an emergency to deal with those things now, yes, but they have always existed. And I think that that is where the greatest frustration comes from.
And the urgency around it as well. Kuto on Twitter says, the money was not there. People must understand that this is an emergency. And Sasant saying that it is all of a sudden. Remember, money has never been the reason for the lack of service delivery, but a question of capability. We've come to the end of Thought Council. Thank you guys so much. Abongile Zizi, Khotso Mukhiseng, as well as Lungani Mteto. Appreciate your time. It's 11 o'clock. It's time for Power News. When we come back, we're in conversation with the Department of Water and Sanitation. Will raise some of those questions that Abongile has raised now as well. Schools without water now will have water. Why didn't they have water before? But we'll also be looking at the unqualified audit opinion that unqualified audit report that the department got from the Auditor General, and also some of the investigations in that department.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.